And right now, very happy to welcome to our program Cindy Sheehan, peace activist and mother of U.S. Army Specialist Casey Sheehan, killed in the Iraq War in April 2004. She became the face and conscience of the U.S. peace movement when she bluntly asked President George W. Bush for what noble cause had her son died. And she set up a peace encampment near Bush's ranch in Texas in August 2005. I know many of our listeners will remember that as a turning point for the peace movement and questions about the war in Iraq. Cindy hosts her own radio show, Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, and she's the author of the forthcoming book, Revolution, A Love Story. Cindy, thanks for being on the program with us tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me on today.
Cindy, given that you had been so involved in opposition to this war and questioning the motives of the Bush administration, and of course this past week we saw the quote-unquote official end of the war, and I'm not sure this war is over by any means, but of course you have the bulk of U.S. troops that have moved out of Iraq. What are some of your thoughts on this very painful episode in your life and the life of this country, and certainly the lives of millions of Iraqis?
Well, I have like so many thoughts going through you know, my head right now and my emotions and everything. It's very emotional because of course it was and is a war based on lies and deception and for control of Iraq's natural resources and for profit. And besides the fact that, you know, that we have an embassy there that's the size of 94 football fields, the largest embassy in the world, and the U.S. is maintaining that with about 16,000 employees, and half of those employees will be private military contractors. And I read that 3,000 troops are staying in Kuwait, just right across the border from Iraq, and of course we still have a lot of military installations and troops inside the country and surrounding the country. So, I mean, just with the death of Kim Jong-il, we have 30,000 troops still in Korea, and that war has never officially, or that police action has never officially ended. So, you know, there's those thoughts going through my head, but then, you know, of course, the Iraqi people, Barack Obama has never mentioned them. He's mentioned the sacrifice of our troops, but not the 2 million Iraqis that have been killed by the U.S. since the war and sanctions from the first Bush administration, and the millions that have been displaced, and their country's in ruins. I think we owe the people of Iraq so much, but the very least we owe them is building supplies and jobs to get their country, get the infrastructure back, and their universities full staff and fully equipped, and their hospitals fully staffed and fully equipped. We owe that, I think, the very least to the people of Iraq, and their country is contaminated with depleted uranium. But, you know, there's so many people, all of this death and destruction and heartache and sorrow, you know, with 600,000 U.S. troops have applied for disability since the war started in Iraq and Afghanistan, and most of them are Iraqi veterans. With the thousands of Americans who died, it just was so not necessary and so wasted. And even if I'm glad you said quote unquote official end to the war, because of course it really really hasn't ended, and where will those troops be redeployed anyway? But like right before I came on the air, I heard some tragic news. My friend Carlos Arredondo, his son was killed in Iraq in August of 2004, 4 months after my son was killed. And if people will remember, Carlos was so distraught, he and the Marines wouldn't leave. He caught their van on fire and caught himself on fire and got second and third degree burns over 26% of his body. And he was, you know, he's now a peace activist. I've worked with him and his wife, Melita, a lot, and I just found out his other son committed suicide today. And that's his only other son. So even if the war did end, it's not going to end for me. It's not going to end for the Arredondos. It's not going to end for the people of Iraq and the other people who have paid such horrible, unnecessary sacrifices for this. And we, you know, the homeless vets and the vets that have brain injuries that aren't getting diagnosed and things like that. It's just a needless tragedy.
Thank you for that, Cindy. And as you said, it's not just the physical damage and the loss of lives. There's the emotional damage and the trauma to hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people in Iraq and this country. And Cindy, I wanted to ask you what you thought about the legacy of this war in Iraq when it comes to the notion of U.S. empire, that the United States should be the world policeman, that somehow the wars that are fought in the name of quote-unquote democracy have in the past, you know, had support among the people of this country. But do you think there is a new skepticism about wars abroad that maybe dissipated years after the Vietnam War was over?
I'm not sure that there is a skepticism because when Bush was president, there was like this reawakening of this, you know, opposition to war and wars for empire and you know, wars of choice. And so, but then we've seen in the Obama administration that the same people who opposed what the Bush administration was doing have supported Obama's surges in Afghanistan. They rationalized what he's doing. They supported the humanitarian bombing of Libya that killed tens of thousands of people that was supposed to be a no-fly, enforcing a no-fly zone, but then it went to Tripoli and turned into regime change. And the same people who would have been opposed if George Bush did it now support it. So I think a lot of it has to do with partisan politics. But I also want to say with the other side of that coin is the people who would have supported it if Bush was president opposed it because Obama's president. So we have to understand that the war machine is a powerful entity in this country. It doesn't matter if a Democrat or Republican's in power. It has this momentum that keeps rolling on because we, the people, seem to get on board with certain wars of choice depending on who is the president.
We're speaking tonight on Counterpoint with Cindy Sheehan, nationally and internationally known peace activist who lost her son Casey in the Iraq War in 2004. And Cindy, we'll ask you about your book before we say goodnight, The Revolution Love Story. And we'll also let people know how they can listen to your radio program, which you have. But before we get there, I wanted to ask you about accountability. Cindy, it seems that officials of the Bush administration who advocated for this war and executed this war in the name of getting rid of weapons of mass destruction that were not there and may have been certainly a false pretext upon which this war was fought, just in the name of gaining public favor for the war, there really does seem to be no accountability for any of them, higher-ups and those lower officials who lied to the American public about this war. What are your thoughts about accountability at this moment when most U.S. troops have left the war, have left Iraq?
And that's a good question because, first of all, this drawdown of the troops was negotiated between the Bush administration and the Maliki puppet government in 2008 before George Bush left office. So this isn't anything that Obama did. As a matter of fact, the Obama administration worked really hard to keep the troops there. They wanted the Iraqi government to approve immunity for our troops. And so if they had approved immunity for war crimes, the troops wouldn't have left at all. So people can't, we have to look at this as like, this isn't something that the Obama administration wanted. It's something that the Obama administration tried to prevent. And also, they're preventing and blocking investigations and prosecution or indictments for war crimes and crimes against humanity and of the Bush administration. And this is, would be an, also a good time to speak about Bradley Manning, who allegedly exposed some of those lies and war crimes of troops and you know, the U.S. government in Iraq, and he's on trial. If he's found guilty, he's charged with a capital crime, or he could spend the rest of his life in prison when he exposed those crimes. So instead of going after the people who committed just profound international crimes and war crimes and crimes against humanity, they're prosecuting and persecuting somebody who exposed those crimes. So that just shows the hypocrisy of this empire.
Well said. Another aspect of this war in Iraq was the role that the U.S. corporate media played. Many of our listeners will remember the role that the New York Times reporter Judith Miller played in advocating for the war as the Bush administration officials were trying to roll out the rationale and the pretext for that war. Judith Miller later was forced to resign from the New York Times. But by and large, the corporate media in this country did follow the lead of the White House and Judith Miller in being cheerleaders for a war, which I think many people in this country now believe was illicit and illegal and should have never been fought. What are your thoughts about the media?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more about that, and that's another tragedy of the propaganda tools. And when I was looking at the news at the run up to the invasion and the bombing of Libya, it seemed like they could have just used old stories from Iraq and Saddam Hussein and interchanged the words Libya and Muammar Gaddafi. The propaganda was so transparent for that invasion. So we're really lucky these days that we do have alternative media, and we do have the internet that people can access real information, not just propaganda.
As we hear the drum beats for a new war with Iran, based on the idea that Iran is developing nuclear weapons capability, and we're seeing that heat up with the 2012 election campaign and a lot of criticism of President Obama by the Republicans, and certainly he's responding by taking a harder line on Iran. It seems like we may be in danger of being sucked into another war, based on some kind of hawkish legacy of the United States, the notion that the United States has to be the world authoritarian and must intervene in Iran or other places deemed to be a threat to our nation. What are some of your thoughts about those drumbeats for a new war?
Well, we have to remember that this has been something that's been discussed, excuse me, for years now about Iran and the threat of the U.S., maybe Israel invading Iran. And I just want to, I'm not giving the Bush administration any passes. I'm not going to give the Obama administration any passes either. When Obama was running for president, he said that no option was off the table for dealing with Iran. And seriously, I think that the entrance of China and Russia into this debate may force the U.S. and Israel not to deal with this militarily, because the other countries have said that they won't let that just slide, and that there will be repercussions if the U.S. or Israel invades Iran. So I'm hoping that, first of all, that's just a scary a scary prospect. I read the other day where an analyst said that he thinks we're going into a new Cold War, and which is better than a hot war if there's some tension that is there that prevents us going into World War III, because, you know, it seems like with the buildup of military and the buildup of rhetoric in the Middle East and Africa, if the U.S. just doesn't stop, then that might be where we're heading.
Cindy, I know you follow events going on in Iraq quite closely, and I'm wondering, as the bulk of U.S. troops leave that country, their political structure seems to be rife with internal division, whether it be along religious or ethnic lines, and there's enormous unemployment. The electric grid is still in shambles, and as you said earlier, generally Iraq is not any better off than it was before the invasion. In fact, according to many Iraqis, the nation is a lot worse off than it was under Saddam Hussein, with all his flaws and brutality as a dictator. What's some of your concern about the future of Iraq?
Well, I have been in contact with many Iraqi people, whether they're in Iraq or they had to leave the country, and I have confidence that if the people of Iraq were, you know, left alone without an occupational force, without a puppet government, that they would be able to solve these problems. Much of the sectarian violence was fomented by the U.S., and my Iraqi friends tell me that didn't even exist before this invasion, that Sunni and Shia lived together, worked together, married each other, and it wasn't really that, you know, that noticeable before the current invasion. So then they tell me, you know, above everything, we're Iraqi, and they're proud of the fact that their region is the cradle of civilization, and they're responsible for so much technological advances and human advances from the beginning of time that they can handle their own problems. And they don't need an occupational presence there to solve their own problems. That would be like China coming over and saying, we have to step in and show you know, the United States how to do government. I have confidence in the people of Iraq, who are a highly educated population, you know, dedicated to their families, dedicated to their country, that if they were left alone, that they could come up with a government that would be for the people of Iraq. We can't really say what the government should be for the people of Iraq. It's up to the Iraqis.
We're speaking tonight on Counterpoint with Cindy Sheehan, peace activist, who lost her son, Casey, in the Iraq War back in 2004, and certainly become the conscience and voice of the peace movement in this country over the last bunch of years. And Cindy, I wanted to ask you about your concern about U.S. veterans who will be coming home now, many to a horrendous economic situation, where already I heard the unemployment rate for veterans returning from abroad is 11% higher than the national average. And now with so many more troops that will be coming back to the United States, that situation may grow even worse. And then, of course, you've got the situation of those who've been wounded and disabled by the war and the injuries received there. How well has our government treated returning vets, and what can be done now to make sure their homecoming is a good one?
Well, according to my veteran friends, they're not treated very well, and that's not unusual for veterans. It's been estimated that one quarter to one half of our homeless population are veterans, with a high population of Vietnam veterans. So one of the reasons that many of our young people reenlist is because they can't find jobs. There's no opportunities here. So I mean, it's hard for anybody to find a job, but like you said, for veterans, it's even harder, and that puts them in a really terrible situation where they reenlist. It happened to a personal friend of mine recently. Her son reenlisted because he couldn't find a job. So the only way we're going to improve economic conditions in this country is to really downsize our military, downsize the Pentagon budget, downsize, end the wars that are killing people, and close many of the bases around the world and bring the money back here. We, the Iraqi people, need to rebuild their country and need to be put back to work. But so do the people in the United States, and we need an awful lot of infrastructure improvement in this country also, and that's not happening when we devote so much money to these wars or paying off debt from old wars and the current wars. The war in Iraq's probably going to end up costing the U.S. $3 trillion. I can think of so many more things we can spend on $3 trillion than servicing debt for war and helping these needlessly damaged vets.
Definitely. And that kind of brings me to my last question, Cindy, and that is since September, we've seen the flowering of a new progressive movement across the country, the Occupy Wall Street movement, which has been smashed, has been repressed by police forces in major cities all across this country. We've been covering that quite a bit on this program. But I'm wondering, given that you have engaged, dedicated your life to peace and social justice, what's your take on Occupy Wall Street and where it's headed?
Well, I have been working with my local Occupy movement in Occupy Sacramento, and I was arrested. It was horrible conditions in the jail, but the city won't let the activists camp there, so dozens of us have been arrested at Occupy Sacramento. But I think the movement, and I've spoken there, and I just spoke at Occupy Concord, California the other day. The movement, I think, first of all, has to address this out-of-control military spending. If we don't address the out-of-control military spending, then the thing, we can't address social spending and jobs and good jobs that manufacture good things that we need to use, not airplanes and tanks and bombs and tear gas and pepper spray and things like that. So I think the movement needs to be more on top of addressing the military-industrial complex as first step one. Step one is peace, and then the social issues in the United States can be worked on. But I think that movements should be local. I think that change happens locally. Good change for us. I think that it's obvious with the oppression of the police state and with Congress voting to end the payroll tax cut for us, but not for the end the tax breaks for the 1%. That we have very little influence on what happens federally. So I think we best organize locally and change it in a grassroots way that's very horizontal and not vertical. I think vertical power has been proven to be very corrupt and very greedy and very violent.
Well, Cindy, thank you so much. We're almost out of time, but before you go, do tell our listeners just a little bit, maybe a tease here about your new book, Revolution, a Love Story, and your radio show, how they can tune in.
Okay. My radio show is at CindySheehansSoapbox.com, and there is information from my book, Revolution, a Love Story. It's about the grassroots revolutions in South America and how that power has been real horizontal. And if it hasn't been horizontal, how it's like in Venezuela, the power has been shared between the government and between the people, and the government, how the government is very responsive to the needs of the people. since Hugo Chavez has been in power. But it's also about dispelling the myths about Hugo Chavez and the Bolivarian Revolution. And if people go to my website, they can listen to an interview I did with President Chavez down in, I think we were in Uruguay when I did the interview, and just a lot of other amazing interviews. I interviewed Arne Gunderson. I heard that he was on before me.
That's right. Yeah, he was giving us an update on Fukushima. So we're a small tribe, I guess.
Yep.
So, okay, so that's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, .com, right?
Yes.
Okay. Cindy, thanks for sharing your thoughts, and I know it's an emotional time for you as the war, quote-unquote, as we talked about before, officially winds down. But there's still so much to do and so much to talk about in terms of the legacy of this war, and I thank you for sharing your assessment of that with us this evening. Both.
Well, thank you. Thanks for doing what you're doing.
Well, likewise to you, and I know many of our listeners really, and including myself, we applaud your courage and determination to fight the good fight for peace and for justice, as you continue to do, and we support you in that. Thanks so much, Cindy.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night, Cindy. Bye-bye. That's Cindy Sheehan, mother of U.S. Army Specialist Casey Sheehan, who was killed in the Iraq War back in 2004, and her activism has certainly inspired many to become active against the Iraq War under the Bush administration, and she continues to struggle for peace and justice.